About Lag BaOmer, I'm not giving out any handouts. It's not necessary. I want to tell you over some ideas from the Gemara, which I think are very relevant to Lag BaOmer. So yesterday we went to the Gemara. Yeah, let's just review. Let's try at least 2 points. Let me recap the story. The story of Rashi begins where there is a conversation between three people: Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloy, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon. And the question, the topic of discussion is, how do we relate to the Umos HaOlam? The Umos HaOlam have built a world. The Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloy, when he comes to speak about the world, he says, the Umos HaOlam, the Romans specifically, they've created shavakim, markets, they have built bridges, and they have built bathhouses. We discussed yesterday the significance of these three things. Okay, so that was yesterday. But basically, this basic approach was, on a very simple level, was to give high praise to the Umos HaOlam. We assume over here that this is not just a private conversation in someone's basement. This was a discussion of public policy. Okay, it's like only I can think something similar is the Knesset HaGedolah in Vienna. What year was that? The second 37. Knesset, 37. What? It was before. Okay, it was before World War II, I think one of the hot issues. If I'm not mistaken, it was different. He left right away because it was going to be Lashon Hara, Zionism. So he ran away. He right away sensed there's going to be Lashon Hara. What? Chofetz Chaim.
He was there?
That was the picture, the famous picture, the video. The video which we surfaced has been coming in, and he sat down, he was in there, and then someone came over to him and basically said Lashon Hara, pretty much, about, and he said, you know what, I'm out of here. I didn't come here for this. He didn't go, and then he went back to his room, and he didn't come anymore. He didn't come. He didn't come back for all of the sessions because he sensed that it's going to turn into a big Lashon Hara match. And it really was. That's really what it was, a big topic of discussion about what should be the public policy, the statement from the Agudas Yisrael in regard to Zionism. There's a hot, a whole book on it, a record of all the discussions. It's amazing. They have all the Gedolim who were there and exactly what everyone believe everyone, what everyone either said or their approach.
New
yeah.
That new book is a revisionist book.
I know, I told you. I'm the one who told you it's a revisionist book. I'm the one. I told you that it's a revisionist book. I told you. But even though it's a revisionist book, and I told you, I claimed that he owes me money because it was sold on false pretenses. I told you the whole story.
Yeah.
But there is there a lot of very interesting information that I never saw anywhere and I would never be aware of. And there he presents, he does it for his advantage. He presents all the information for his advantage in order to be a revisionist. Okay, that's not for now. But the point is, there was a very hot topic, and one of the things he mentioned is the people is, who cares what the Aguda has to say? Who cares? You're not a player. You're not a player in Zionism. So the answer is no, you're right. No one cares. There's a very interesting point. No one cares what we have to say. They didn't have any respect for the Gedolim. The people that were calling the shots, that were dealing with the Umos HaOlam of lobbying and politicking, whatever you want to say, that there should be a Medina, they're not coming to ask Orthodox Jews and their rabbis their opinion regarding this matter. Yet, it was very interesting where they felt, listen, with Shomer Torah Mitzvos, we have a duty and a responsibility to present, at least we should know ourselves. Forget about it, no one wants to listen. We should have clarity in what this means. We're entering into a new tikkuf in this world where this potential that there's going to be a state of Israel recognized as a country no different than any other state country in the entire world. We have to have clarity in what is a proper Torah hashkafa regarding this potential and how to proceed, even though it's practically speaking irrelevant. But you know, this and there were big fights, all different opinions. There were people that were to the extreme that it's mamish apikorsis, and then there were people that were very pro, and there were a lot of in the middle. There were a lot of people that were somehow torn in the middle. My great-grandfather, the Reish Sharaf, he was very much involved in this, and he was in the middle. He was somehow, he did not agree with people to the right. There were a lot of gedolim that were very much opposed his approach, and there were people that were even more pro. We're dealing with gedolim Yisrael, nothing over here, you know, dealing with the real deal. It's a different world. It was a different time. It was before the Holocaust, before World War II. It was before this point he makes in the book, which really I never thought about. It scares me. It was before even the people who were the most pro, even the most pro never, the argument is, they never really saw how much blood would be spilled in the establishment of the state. Everyone knows you can't have a state without people dying. That's another question. There are going to be wars. People are going to die. In the establishment, it was a given that when they declared when they declared Israel to be a state, that what did that mean? It wasn't a day of celebration. You have to read the history. It was basically a day of mourning, because with declaring Israel a state and it being approved by the United Nations, what did it mean? It means war. It means all of the surrounding nations declaring war on Israel, and that's exactly what Sitterin. We weren't necessarily happy that it should be, maybe it would be better that the United Nations say, no, we don't accept it. And that way, we can go to sleep at night. When the moment after the state of Israel was declared, was accepted, all of the Arab nations declared war. Every able body in Israel was recruited to fight. That's not fun. That's not a fun thing. Okay, so there's going to be a war. We'll win the war. Really? You'll win the war? How many people died? How many korbanos? In hindsight, the scope of the number of people who died is, and the collateral damage and the horrors that occurred were way, way, way beyond anyone's wildest expectations.
It was
the bracha that the Medina brought to the world was also way beyond anyone's wildest expectations. But the collateral damage and the price that was paid was also way, way beyond. So that's a very interesting point. Would that have changed anyone's mind? Hindsight is 2020. Is it? I don't even know it's 2020. Would that, who, no one knows anything. Okay, all of this, all very serious. But how does it come to Lag BaOmer? What? Yeah, that was an obvious thing. No, Vienna was too early for that. Vienna was too early for that. It wasn't happening. It wasn't imminent. It wasn't imminent. But you have to ezel chacham arayas anoylat. If you're going to have a state, you're going to declare a state in the Middle East, in the hostile region where they want to destroy you. This leads to war. This leads to strife, milchama. So, okay, so that's the way the world goes. There's Muhammad. People have to put your life on the line for telling you value. But in hindsight, we look back to how many people on record, 22,700, what was the number? Almost 23,000 people gave up their lives. Gave up their lives. The number of injured, you don't want to know. I don't even want to tell you the name of this book, because this book is censored, as far as I'm concerned. We're getting off the topic. This is not even where I want to get. I want to bring out another point. We have to appreciate that the story of Lag BaOmer is just like, my humble opinion, is just like the meeting in Vienna, in the Knesset Gedolah. It was, how does a Jew, a responsible, thinking, religious Jew, relate to his mother country? Now, that was about the state of Israel. But here we are in America. We're at the mercy of the United States of America. We're a very small number. There are over 300 million citizens in this country. There are Jews. There's not more than 6-7 million Jews in America. Okay?
That's
How many Jews are there in America?
5 million.
Five million. From the 5 million, how many of them are religious? Not even talking about Orthodox. Religious.
700,000?
Religious.
Impossible.
And how many are, impossible to know exactly, how many are Orthodox? Orthodox? It's too high. Much too high. 600,000 in America are Orthodox? It's a very high number.
Every year, they say that 10% of American, 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 of American
question, how do you when you come into school, you come into shul, why isn't there a flag? Why isn't there a flag in every shul, an American flag? Not an Israeli flag. That's a different story. Why isn't there in the hallway an American flag? We are a guest in this country. In the Beis HaMikdash, on the front door was an image of Shushan Habira. And this is the Beis HaMikdash. We're not in the Beis HaMikdash now. So these are very important matters. And just because the Goyim are not knocking on our door and demanding answers, in Vienna, no one could care less what we have to say. These are the greatest Gedolei Yisrael, and they openly said, no one cares what we have to say. They had a persecution complex. Much, much more than today with Molly Gaiva. We think we run the world today. We think today you're walking down the streets in Flappish, you're in control of the world. Your Shver is Donald Trump. That's what we think today. We live with this fantasy world. They were very realistic. They were persecuted. They were dirt poor. They suffered. No one could care less about a Jew. And yet in Vienna, there was a certain Kovet HaAdam. We have an obligation, a responsibility to relate to this new thing that may happen one day. What should it be, a Torah Hashkafa? They don't care what we say, but so if we're living in America, what is the proper Torah Hashkafa to relate to our host country? This was a topic of discussion between Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yiloi, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yiloi said we should appreciate everything that they do. They build bridges, they build markets, there's an economy, there is bridges, transportation, and there is health. Public health, merchatzos, and this is something that's praiseworthy, and we should give him credit where credit is due. Rabbi Yossi, quiet. Rabbi Shimon said, the bunch of oisvars, everything that they do is just for their own. They're selfish people. They build the shvakim for themselves. The bridges are for taxes. The shvakim are for the zoynos. The economy is all built for znus, and the bridges, the transportation is just a way to make money. And the merchatzois, what was the saying with merchatzois? I forgot.
For their own pleasure.
For their own, la'adim es atzman, their own pleasure. So what happened? This conversation made its way to the government.
Leaked
or maybe whatever, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim. And what happened? So Rabbi Yehuda bar Yiloi was elevated, the Rosh HaMedabrim b'chol makom. Rabbi Yossi was exiled to Tzipore. And Rabbi Shimon was labeled a fugitive, a criminal, a wanted man. He was wanted to be executed by the government for saying such nasty things about the government, such an attitude, a dangerous approach to not to appreciate your mother country, the one that's providing, with letting you live here. Wait, I'm sorry. So this, three different opinions. So what happened? He went into the cave for 12 years. He hid out with the sun for 12 years. After 12 years, Eliyahu HaNavi told him, all right, it's time to come back, come out, the gezeirah is over, the government officials are no longer here, and come out. He comes out into this world, he looks around, and he says, what kind of crazy world is this? And people, they're working, they're not being oisek in Torah. Right? And we have to remember that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai l'shitasoi, there's machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and Rashi. Rabbi Shmuel says that if a person devotes himself fully to Hashem, all of your melacha will be done for you. The world will provide for you. You don't have to do anything. The world will be your servants. And if you're not oisei ritzoinei shel makayim, then you're going to have to work. And not only are you going to have to work to support yourself, you're going to have to work to support the world, the Gemara says. Not only are you going to have to work, the malach of the rest of the world will be done by you. So he looks at these people and he sees they're working. So that means, it's not, now that's his opinion, by the way. Rabbi Yishmael disagrees. Rabbi Yishmael says, Haneg bohem minog derech eretz. You have to conduct yourself in this world the way the rest of the world conducts themselves. You have to go get a job and conduct it. And the Gemara says many people tried to do like Rashbi and they were not successful. And those who tried to do like Rabbi Yishmael were successful. So in the Das Yochid, he was a Das Yochid in this matter of Parnasa. But he comes out into the world and he sees something of Parnasa, he goes berserk. He goes berserk. He cannot deal with the situation. So what is it? Leo Hanavi, so the bicycle says, go back into the cave. Go back into the cave and doesn't say what to do in the cave. It seems like it wasn't a lot of fun in the cave. It doesn't say he's learned in the cave we learned yesterday. It says they just sat there. The first 12 years, it says garrison. The next 12 months, it just says they sat there. And they said about themselves, it's Gehenim in here. It's Gehenim in here, and Gehenim is only for 12 months. They viewed it as a sentence of Gehenim. It was no learning. It was just reflecting upon their attitude, their forbidden attitude of coming out into this world and mocking everyone and looking down at these people. You're wasting your time by getting a parnasa. You should be involved in learning. So they were punished by going into the cave for 12 months. It was Mishpat Shel Gehenim is Yud Beis Chodesh. The Baskel says, come out. Now here's the point. Now he comes out. Now let's go further. We have to bring out a point. He comes out of the cave. Then he meets up with Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi seems to be his shver, his father-in-law. If not mistaken, it was his father-in-law. And he comes out of the cave first. There's a little story there, which is not the point I want to make, because he sees two people running. He comes out of the cave, and then they see people running. And his son Eliezer is still a kanoi, and whoever he looks at, he destroys. But here is the difference. Here, when they come out of the cave already, Rashbi has mellowed. Well, actually, mellowed. He has a different approach. And whatever his son Eliezer destroys, Rashbi heals. Okay, so we see now a whole new tkufa where there's a balance between the kanoi of the next generation and Rashbi already has a new attitude. He's not looking to destroy the world anymore. He's looking to bring refuah to the world. He then meets his father-in-law, Rabbi Yossi, and he goes to a bathhouse and he notices that his skin, he's sitting in the sand for 13 years has caused his body enormous damage. And Rabbi Yossi cries, and he tells him, don't cry. Adarabba, because I suffered so much, I've become a very great Talmud Chacham. Before, it used to be that when I would ask a question, 12 answers, 24 answers, whatever the whole story is, only because of my suffering, I have become a very great Talmud Chacham. Now we come to the important point. Then he says, Rashbi says, look, a miracle has happened. I survived. I was a fugitive. I was a wanted man. This normally, the government, they get their people. They find their people. I lived in the cave for 12 years. I had no food, no clothing. And look, after everything is said and done, a miracle happened. It's my duty now to give back to society. And who do I learn from? Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu was also in very great danger. He had a fight with the Malach, the Sar Shel Esav. And Yaakov Avinu miraculously survived. Vayovo Yaakov Sholem, Vayichan Pinei Ho'ir. Rashi says, Yaakov said, if I was zoicha to a miracle, I survived, it's my duty to do something for the community. And he did either one of three things. Either he minted coins, or he built a bathhouse, or he created an economy, shvokim. I also have a need to do something good for society. Okay, what does society need? Let me do something. what's on the agenda? What do people need here? Do you need a new bathhouse? No, we don't. We already have one. You need a new shul? Oh, too many shuls. Adarab, you do us a favor by shutting down some of the shuls, right? What can I do for you people here? So he said, well, there's a road here, and there's a Sufek Tumah. There's a question if there are graves buried on this road. It would be a very great benefit for us if you can clarify. It's a Sufek. If you can clarify for us by one way or another if the road is indeed contaminated, yes or no. So he got a fellow. He brought us. I need evidence. I need something to work with. Who here can help me? So the Gemara says there was a Saba. There are different interpretations of the Gemara. I'm going to present you the system's interpretation. This Saba was an old man. He was not a Leo Hanavi. He was a bad guy. He was not a nice guy. And he presented evidence. Now, it appears from the Gemara, the only reason why he presented evidence was because he really wanted to set up Rashi. He didn't like Rashi. He wanted to set him up. He wanted to somehow take advantage of him. We'll see in a moment how. And he told him very important pieces of information about this road. And Rashi used this information to do something which appears to be supernatural. He put truma on the road, and in any area where there was a dead body, there was a bone, the soil loosened, and that determined that there was a keder, and that part was marked off. And any part of the road that remained hard was certainly not an area of a Beis HaKfar. So again, it's a whole story, it's not important. The point is, he went and he clarified for the people of this community where it's Tameh and where it's Tar. When you're driving down the highway, so the GPS that says, Koihanim to the left. Okay? And then when you get down to this exit, Koihanim to the right. Okay, you ever see on the highway such signs? Right? Exit, and then there's a big green sign, Koihanim, make sure you move into the second lane. Only the second lane, not the other lane. You get a ticket if you go in the wrong because you become Tameh. Okay, they're watching special license plates for Koihanim so the police can ticket you if you're in the wrong lane. Because in this lane, it's Tameh, and this lane is Tar. This is what he did. Now, before we go further, this is an incredible insight. Today is Lag BaOmer, and Lag BaOmer is associated with extreme joy. Go and see what's going on, the dancing. What's pshat? Lag BaOmer, they wrote this extreme joy. Chazal tell us, Ein simcha kehataras hasvegos. There is no greater simcha in this world than clarification. Hataras hasvegos. Now, when it comes to clarification, there are many different types of svegos in this world. There's a sofek in physical matters. Should I have this medical procedure or should I not? This doctor says yes, and this doctor says no. I have a real dilemma. It's driving me nuts. What should I do? It's driving me crazy. Well, go to another doctor. He makes me, I'm even more confused. I go to another doctor. I'm even more confused. You travel the world to all the biggest doctors, and you're more confused until finally someone can clarify for you what to do. Wow. Chazal tell us that in this world, believe it or not, having a good steak, having a good vacation pales in comparison to the joy a human being experiences when a dilemma is resolved. A dilemma is torment. Ein, you cannot ignore those words. Ein simcha kehataras hasvegos. But if you're a spiritual person and you have doubts in the spiritual arena, you can only imagine the simcha is infinitely greater. If we can appreciate that in the physical, mundane world, when you have doubts, dilemmas, what to do, ain't simcha kataris asvekos, could you imagine when it comes to a person whose whole life is all about ruchnias, is all about spiritual matters, and you have dilemmas in the world of ruchnias, and these dilemmas are resolved? That is the ultimate possible simcha there can be in this world. Clarifications of matters of tumah, Vitahara. It doesn't just mean bones. Bones. It represents clarification of spirituality. Why is Lag BaOmer a day that we associate with such great happiness? Bonfires, extreme happiness dancing, is because Rashbi, when he said, it's my turn now to give back to society, I'm going to do something for them. What did he in essence do? He gave society simcha. The government, what did they do for this world? They built bathhouses, they built bridges, and they built markets. You know what did Yaakov Avinu do? He built a bathhouse. Or he minted coins, or he established markets. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something even better. I'm going to bring joy to this world. The greatest joy you can bring in this world is Ein Simcha Kehatara Sasvegas. In spiritual matters, Tumah V'Tahara, and what it represents. Rashbi, when he experienced a tzara, and he was miraculously spared, and he now came to give back to this world. What did he give this world? Simcha. Therefore, today on his yard site, it's a day of simcha. Because look what he gave. Well, we celebrate his legacy. What's his legacy? Forget about Zohar. I'm not even going there. You know what it says in the Zohar? I don't even know any one word of the Zohar. Forget about Zohar. Read the Gemara. The Gemara is very simple. You know what he gave to Klal Yisrael? He gave them simcha. Because Chazal tell us, ein simcha ke'ataras ha'svegas. And if the simcha when it comes to mundane physical matters, alachas kam v'kama, the simcha you have when it comes to tumah v'tahara. And what it represents. Today is a day of simcha. This is the legacy of Rashbi. Now the story down. One more point, we're almost finished. Next point. Different point, but very important. This fellow who provided Rashbi with all of the information that he needed in order to clarify if this road was Tamei Vitar, to clarify the Suffolk, was really just trying to set him up. And the Gemara there says, after Rashbi paskin that it's Tahar, he went and made a billboard. He went and he said, look at this guy. He was Matir Tumah. All of these years, no one traveled on the road. And this fellow, Rashbi, went, he's being Matir Asurim. He's permitting forbidden matters. It's amazing. He went and he fed him the information that he needed. And then he turned against him. This is the first of the Gemara. He turned against him and went and made a bilbul. A bilbul about Rashbi is a balavera. He's a danger to society. He's a renegade rabbi. He's an open Orthodox rabbi. That's really what he said about him. It's really what he said about him. He said that he's doing things that are unconventional. Unconventional. He looks like an Orthodox rabbi. And look what he's doing. This is not tradition. And this is the guy himself. So why did this guy do this? Because Chazal, he was jealous. So what did Rashbi say to him? Mechutzif. What a mechutzif you are. Even the Zoinois, they beautify one another. They're both competing for the business. They're going there to the wherever they go, and they're competing for the business. The one that's more beautiful usually gets the business. But even the Zoinois, they go and they help out one another become beautiful. And here, you're a Talmud Chacham, you have Smicha, you're Rosh Hashiva. I also have Smicha, I'm also Rosh Hashiva. So don't you think that we should help out one another? We shouldn't stab each other in the back. You're jealous of me because I'm getting some covet here in society, and you help me, and now you're making a bad face. If Zoinois, don't you think you should Talmid Chacham? And right away, right then and there is what Lag BaOmer is all about. Because what happened during the Svira? Sheloi nohagu kovoid ze lo ze. And this mamish illustrates the Talmidei Chacham Shloi Nohagu, the story of Rashbi. The ultimate story of Shloi Nohagu Kovod Zeh Mozeh is the story of Rashbi and this fellow. This fellow goes and he helps him. He feeds him the information. He sets him up to then turn to stab him in the back and to go. They say, look at this guy. He gave him the information which was used to be matir the tumah. And then he goes and he makes a bilbul. The minog was, it was tameh. And he goes and he's making a tahar. He's unconventional. He's conservative. He's a danger to society. What are you doing? Two talmidei chachamim. This is no how we covered Zelozer. He gave a look, and he died. Okay. Now, after that happens, we now come back to the beginning of the story. Rashbi is walking in the street, and who does he see there in the street? Yehuda ben Gerim. Yehuda ben Gerim. I was incarcerated. I was locked up in the cave for 12 years, 13 years. I suffered because you, the Rasha, was malshin on me to the government. And I said, the government, everything they did was for their own benefit. And you're still alive? Can it be? He gave one look. Nasegal shalat samas. Okay, now here, Mamash, 1 minute. Hear me out. 1 minute. The point. What happened to Rashbi is exactly what he did to the government. The government went, in the beginning of the story, they built bridges. The politicians, they appear to be sincere. No?
No.
Sometimes. Depends who. I mean, they want the covet, obviously. No question about it. They love this type of stuff. This certain type of personality. But, you know, some of them, they try to do good here and there. They build bridges, give people jobs. Shavakim, the Merchatzois. What was the third thing? The bathhouse. They
will become millionaires.
Yeah. They, what was the three things they did? They
built
the bridges, the bathhouse,
and the Shavakim. And the Shavakim. So Rashbi came along as a Kanoi, and said, you don't give a hoot about the people. You're a politician. You're a phony, baloney person. You don't give a hoot about anyone. You just want your own covet. You just want your own covet. It's all you want. That's what he said about that. I'm right. Rashbi is now the politician. Rashbi comes out of this whole story. I am going to be native to the Welt. I'm going to give the Welt simcha. Ein simcha katar sasfekas. I'm the good politician. And now comes along the Saba and is behaving like me. What I did to the government. And he says, what is the Saba saying to society? Rashbi is a phony. Rashbi's coming to give you all simcha. He just wants to covet for himself. He can't matir beis hakvaris. Kohanim can't go here. What is he doing? Rashbi, you know why he's telling you that you're allowed to go walk over here? Because they're going to name the street after him now. It's going to be called the Rashbi Street. Until now, it was Tameh. No one goes here. He's matir asurim. So now, you're going to give him cover, you're going to name it the Rashbi Street. Whatever Rashbi is doing, he's doing for his own cover. This is mamish. It's being thrown in his face. And what does Rashbi say to himself? You liar. I did this 100% l'shem shamayim. Atoho ish. So maybe now, think about it. Maybe now, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Yiloi was right. Maybe when the government went and they built bridges and they built Merchatzois and Shavakim, maybe they taka did it l'shem shamayim. And Yehuda Bar Yiloi is not a person you can ignore. He's a holy person. And he says they did it l'shem shamayim. Now he's experiencing, he's getting a taste of his own medicine. He's now the one that's the politician, and now he's being challenged by someone that says that you're a charlatan. You're doing it for your own hana. And I know you're wrong. The same way I know that he's wrong, maybe I was wrong in being so critical. Now when he finally came to that realization, only now does he see Yehuda ben Gerim. And now, Yehuda ben Gerim, we come back, when he sees Yehuda ben Gerim at the end, it's not a coincidence. It's now, I've learned my lesson. I've learned my lesson, so now we can put an end to that, to Kufa. The person, Yehuda ben Gerim, we have to come on, there's more to that, but let's look through that. Yehuda ben Gerim was... It's a different point. It's a really different point. Let's leave it out for now. But listen, we're out of time. But let's dwell upon this point. The story at the end, we'll leave it with that, is really, it's happening to him. Exactly what, on the other side of the fence. He is experiencing what it means to be accused of being a faker when he knows for real that he meant it l'shem shemayim. Now, what about the goyim? Well, the truth is, if Yehuda Bar Eloi can say they did it l'shem shemayim, maybe there is an element. It may not be 100%. Rashbi certainly was correct. Whenever they do it for themselves, they do it for the zoynos, la'adres atzlam, for the money. Okay, but you cannot ignore that there's a little mashahu that the government does for the people that is l'shem shemayim. And who says this? Yehuda Bar Elam, who's a holy, holy person, he made that claim. So Rashbi now, when he sees how he is being accused of being a charlatan, of being a phony, he gets a taste of his own medicine. You know, I have charoto, what I did. Now the whole story is a full cycle. And now when you do that, who's the Saba? Chazal rule. A Saba in Shas always is who? Eliyahu HaNavi. Eliyahu HaNavi was the Kohen in disguise that fed him the information and then made a bilbul upon him. Why would he do that? Eliyahu HaNavi is coming to teach him a lesson. Don't be such a kanoi. Don't be such a kanoi. You are kanoi in dealing with the government, and because of that you suffer for many, many years. What you said was true. No one's denying the fact that the goyim are doing it for their own benefit. But there might be a little bit of l'shem shemayim because of Yehuda Bar Eloi. And when you're the victim, and when you're in their shoes, and you taka see that I taka meant l'shem shemayim, and now someone's accusing me, what do you mean l'shem shemayim? You want the street to be named after you. That's what it's all about. You see it from a different perspective.
That happened to Eliyahu HaNavi.
Himself.
Yeah.
With Achav, with
with Bris.
So exactly now he has to come. Okay, so it puts the Gemara in an entirely new light. And when it comes now to the practical matter, when it comes now to the original, how do you relate to the Goyim? It's a very tough, tough thing to relate to God. There are three opinions in the Gemara. How do you relate to your host country? But look at the end of the story. The end of the story is Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But you have to have respect for someone else's opinion. That's the least. It's taka true. Rashi's true. There's no question. They do it for selfish reasons. But at the end of the story, he did learn a lesson that there may indeed be a degree, an element, they do it l'shem shemayim. And that little element is deserving of respect. It's deserving of something. Chazal said that you're not allowed to call it pasuk says, because tsar to a mitzri. Ki ger hoyisa biyartso. You were a guest in his country. In Mitzrayim for 210 years, you were starving to death, and they fed you for 210 years. Even though they tortured you, even though they threw your children to the Nile, they took your children and they made them as bricks. The pasuk is a pasuk. I'm not making it. It's not a chazal. It's a pasuk. You were a guest in their country. Have respect. Rashbi, at the end of the story, learned to have respect. His position, you can maintain his position to a degree. That's the story of Lag BaOmer. That really, to a degree, is to see the big picture. Have a wonderful day.